How would you like to discover how to go from $5 million to $20 million in revenue? Why founders plateau and how to break the ceiling? Alexis Sikorsky will tell us how to do it. Alexis has built, scaled, and exited a company for over $100 million, and he's the founder of Sikorsky Consulting. And he shares insights on the invisible wall founders hit between $5 million and $20 million in revenues, and why most never make the leap. So, Alexis, tell us, how can entrepreneurs go from $5 million to $20 million in revenue, and why most entrepreneurs never make that leap?
Welcome to Awakened Titans Podcast with Lily Patrescu. Mind-blowing conversations with influential business titans sharing how you can manifest abundance, love, joy, success through quantum awakening, quantum manifestation, quantum healing, quantum miracles, exponential business growth, and innovative products and services.
Hello, Lily. Thanks for having me. Well, there's many reasons, obviously. I call that the multiple growth pain of a company, right? You know that the founders all know that you have a few growth pain. The first one is when you reach like around 1 million. It's like you from a one-man show and almost like a hobby to actually starting to turn into a company. So right now you need staff and you need to start building a little bit of a company, right? And then you reach to like 5-10 million, and then lots of things happen when you reach that point and that first ceiling. First one is you don't know everybody in your company anymore. You need to start hiring people to hire people. So that's point number one. That means you have to worry at stuff like, it hurts even saying the word, but like HR. And you have to worry about recruitment, you have to worry about processes, and you have to do all that stuff. Second thing that happened is you started your company with your families and friends. Like, that's how it happens, with people around you. And you know your cousin, who've been so good at doing your books, he might not be your CFO, actually. And then the third thing that happened is you start to need really, really good people, because it gets hard. Like, you start to be noticed by competition, you start to hit bigger clients who have way more processes, and you need suddenly to do stuff like request for proposals, and you need to be onboarded as a suppliers and all that stuff. You need to have your ISO processes depending on which universe you have. So you start needing good people. And usually the first C-level person you need is a CFO, right? Because when you reach to 5 million, like, if you've been talking to me earlier, you already vaguely know how to count and how to pilot your company. But like, Lily, you know that better than I do. How many people you know have 1 to 5 million companies and they have no idea what their numbers are? Right? They get the number at the end of the year, at best. And sorry, buddy, it's too late. It's like flying a plane or your GPS telling you, oh, by the way, you overshot your airport by 200 miles. Yeah, thank you. Too late. So like, you start needing a proper CFO. But let's say you are a $5 million company. You make $1 million EBITDA if you're lucky. If you've been doing a great job, you make $1 million EBITDA. You hire a CFO and that half your EBITDA gone. Right? And you can multiply that with a COO, a CTO, a head of sales, marketing people, etc., etc. So that's like the difficulty you have. You have this big discrepancy between the people you need and the people you can afford.
Great. Sounds like a lot of problems. So how can someone fix those problems? So imagine the latest problem that you mentioned, which was you need so many great people and you can't afford any of them, or at least you can't afford all of them. What do you do?
Well, I actually, like, I'm a little bit biased because I actually have a solution to fix that. And, you know, just to tell you a little bit about myself. When I started, so I sold my company, then retired, then started to get a little bit bored and starting like, I don't like using the word consulting because consulting, you imagine like producing PDFs and PowerPoint, and I don't do that. I only produce conversation. But I'm an advisor. So I talk to founders and help them go over that step and like more and more say, okay, so basically they need a CFO, but they don't need a CFO full time. And they need a CTO, they don't need a CTO full time. So I hired around me people I've been working with for 20 years and that are like either retired or a bit bored in their day-to-day job and that are willing to help entrepreneurs do that. So this one of the solutions is to go fractional.
Okay, perfect. Tell us about the other problems that you mentioned and how they can be solved as well.
Well, the not having the right people at the right place. What you need, and with most of these people, you need that. You need an outside eye. Doesn't have somebody to be somebody you pay, doesn't have somebody like that does that for a living. We just need somebody who's smart and who knows a little bit what a company is, and that can like it helps you with stuff you already know. If you like take 5 minutes and look at your company, you basically already know. You just need somebody to say, but you know, but you're not doing anything about it. And it's like, yeah, I'll do it next month or I'll do it next year. It's a no, you do it now because it's now that you need to do it. Also, there's something my friend Topher I work with came with this concept that I love. It's actually when you're a founder and a CEO, which is usually the case, you spend a lot of time in the company and not enough time on the company. That's a very, very important concept. Like I say you tend to confuse what's urgent with what's important. You basically don't have time to solve all this issue and have a vision and like put all that together because you're busy talking to client, talking to staff, you're in the company. So the process I put in place with my client is basically fire yourself from your company. So it's basically a process where you identify the task you're uniquely qualified to do. And if your company is a 5 million and you have 20 tasks that you're uniquely qualified to do, then you're doing something wrong. Then you like you have to rethink your whole strategy. And you most of the time you end up doing tons of tasks that you're not uniquely qualified to do. That makes sense?
Yes. So what you need to do is to create some standard operating procedures and then to kind of find people that actually can do the kind of things that you normally do, but you're not necessarily uniquely qualified to do.
Yeah, I 5 million, it's a little bit early for standard procedure. I'm not a huge believer in procedures that early because how many times do you see like you ever go to, I don't know, an airport or a supermarket and you look around and you see how many instances procedure trumps common sense? Like you're still in a size where you don't need really very complex and structured procedure. You need good people. That's the main thing is you need good people.
Thank you. Tell us what else should entrepreneurs keep in mind when going from $5 million to $20 million in revenue?
So at that point, you might want to decide what's your company. What is it and what do you want to be? Give you two very different examples. Have a client, has a software company, Canada, really good software company. Really, really, really good. 10 million revenue, 1 million EBITDA. And you look at the company and say, why? Why do you have 10 million revenue, 1 million EBITDA? And then you start looking like all the salaries of the family are in the company, the cars are in the company, all the travel is in the company, et cetera, et cetera. So that becomes what I call a lifestyle company. Lifestyle company, it's a company that will grow slowly and that's designed to pay the lifestyle of the company and the lifestyle of the founders, the family, the shareholders, etc. It's super good. It's very valuable. It's just, I cannot help this company because it's not my skill set. But that's why, like, we reach like 10 million. You decide, do you want to be a lifestyle company? Then what you have to do is really operational excellence. It's how to do I get this 10 million and run it as cheap as possible so I can pay myself the most salary and dividend as possible. That's really one strategy. And then if you want to be a growth business, that means if your aim is to exit to 100 million at some point, then it's the exact opposite. I don't want a penny in dividends or like the absolute minimum salary, and every penny has to go to growth. So at that point, when you reach 10 million, I would even advocate that you should do that way earlier. But if you haven't done that at that point, you really, really should think, what's your plan? Where do you want to go? What do you want to be? What's the goal of this company?
Thank you. Tell us more about operational excellence, how someone can leverage operational excellence to grow from 5 million to 20 million.
Well, operational excellence will not make you grow. Operational excellence will generate. No, it's an exaggeration, obviously, but growth is not about operational excellence. Growth is about sales, basically, and M&A way earlier than you think. Operational excellence will help you get more profitable and makes your life easier. And I don't really know because I'm really, really not good at operational excellence. It's really not. I was like, if you looked at my company, that was not where we were focused. We were like fuzzy operationally. We were still good. We worked well, but there's so many improvements to be made in that area. Growth is about sales.
Thank you. Tell us about what you did personally in your company that made your company sell for $100 million. Like what led to that immense success?
Okay, I'm just thinking 2 seconds where to start. Started the company in 2000. 2000 to 2003, it was a company that did bespoke development on the internet. 2003, we acquired a bankrupt company that was doing document management software for banks. So 2003 to 2008, we grew the company from 1-2 million revenue to 11, 12 million revenue, super profitable, was the king of the world, specialized in banking software, good offering in banking software, like spending like crazy, hiring the best people, and like thinking I'm the best in the world in my business. And then 2008 global financial crisis. 100% of my clients were banks. So basically, on a Monday, I lost 75% of my revenue. No war chest, no cash in bank, because why would I? Like, keep in mind, I was like 35. I was really stupid at the time, and I didn't know anything. So really, like, I call it the grind years, like from 2008 to 2015, like literally, like, had to mortgage my house, fire half the people in the company, like really survival mode. It was very, very hard at every level, emotionally, physically, like business. It was really hard. And 2015, we just started to recover. It's a long, like 5-6 years grind. 2015, we would say with some creative accounting, we could say we'll go back to break even. So like just break even. And then I get a phone call from a private equity. Like your listeners will know that if you're a founder, you get phone call from private equity every week. You usually don't answer. For some reason, this one I answered. They were French, they were software people. So okay, I'll talk to them. So they say, we'll come next week, we'll come see your company. So they came, and I've been super honest with them, and that's one of the biggest advice you tell people when they talk to private equity. Never lie, they will know. So, being super honest, I tell them, guys, like, I'm tired, I'm exhausted, I've been grinding for 6 years, I would love to sell, but not now because at the moment the company has no value. So I said, I'll make you a deal. You come back in 2 years, I'm going to be at 3 million profit, and I'll sell directly to you. I'm not even going to do a beauty contest, but give me 2 years. And they say, yeah, no, we're not going to do that. They say, we're going to do it a little bit differently. You're going to go home. We're going to come back in a week. And in a week, you're going to show us your business plan for the next 3 years. Said, okay. No, next 2 years. Said, okay. And I did a very, very optimistic business plan because that you're allowed. You never lie. But when you dream about the future, you're about to dream. So I came with a business plan that I think showed like 3 million EBITDA in 2 years from zero, the kind of stuff like private equity laugh about. And they come, they look at the business plan and say, perfect, we're going to buy your company 11 times your numbers. In 2 years, we're going to pay you 85% cash and 15% earnout. And at the moment, I thought it was a joke. Like, I was really thinking like it was a friend doing a prank on me. But no, they did that. And after 2 years, we exceeded very much my best case scenario, end up making more money with the earnout that I did with the actual sales. I kept 23% of the company, and then we grew it mainly by acquisition. We bought a company that was twice our size and brought it to 50 million revenue and 10 million EBITDA, and that when we sold.
Thank you. What would you say was the turning point from the moment where you were, not doing so well financially to the moment where you kind of started to kind of bring the business back to, back to a really good result?
It's the private equity. It's like people are scared of private equity. Definitely founders are scared of private equity because there is so many horror stories about private equity. But they're wrong. Private equity are fantastically helpful because they know stuff that you don't, especially when you are a small to mid-sized company like that. They know so many stuff you don't, and they help you a lot.
Thank you. And why would you say that you managed to kind of have this good result? I mean, like from the moment that you spoke with the private equity firm and then the moment that you actually exceeded your own expectations, why do you feel that you exceeded your own expectations?
Well, there is psychological factors, there is personal growth factors, and there is concrete factors from the business. So, first of all, psychological factor, it's very important. I'm not at all a new age work lifestyle balance kind of guy, but there is one thing that I think from a mental point of view is very important for founders to understand. It's basically you're alone. You're alone, you take all your decision alone. You can talk to people, but at the end of the day, you carry the world, the weight of all your decision. And suddenly you're not alone. To the point that not only you're not alone to make your decision, but you don't make the decision anymore. Suddenly you're an employee. So forces you to properly report, forces you to justify all your decision. I was very much, and I still am very much like gut feeling kind of guy. I think we should be doing that. And I still do that. And I still did that with the private equity. And after a while, it became kind of a sufficient justification. Like, I think we should do that because I have 16 years experience in this field and I have a gut feeling that's the way to go. That worked. But still, you have to explain every month. You have to show your numbers to somebody who's going to tell you, that's not going to work. That's like, what's about that? So that's the psychological factor. And then you learn so much because they like I used to say with the growth of the company, every year is a prototype. Like the first year I reached 10 million, it's the first time in my life I ran a 10 million company, et cetera, et cetera. So they bring you so much knowledge. Like while they do that with you, they do it for 20 other companies at the same time. And they did that for 200 companies. So they've been there, done that. And then there's the concrete help they bring. For example, they brought me a CFO. I actually asked, I said, guys, I need a CFO. I said, okay, we have a guy. The guy came and suddenly I was understanding my company's number. I was not that bad before. That was one of the reasons of the success of the sale is I was not that bad with my number, but still nothing to the level of a professional CFO. Give you a day-to-day example, right? We had our big development office was in Singapore and our headquarters were in Geneva. So we had Lee's internet line from Geneva to Singapore that cost us, don't remember, but like in something like $200,000 a year. It was a very big spend. And I've been trying to get rid of that internet line, and there was very good reason why we needed that. And I'm a tech guy, so when a tech guy explains something to me, I understand. I know it's not pure bullshit, so it was needed. And the guy from private equity came and say, what's that? What's this 200,000? I explained, and he said, no, we're gonna shut that down. And I said, yeah, but we can't. And I explained why. I say, yeah, I understand. We're shutting it down next month. And I called the CTO and I say, next month we're shutting down the lease line. And the guy said, well, it's not possible. I said, sorry, out of my hands. And obviously, 2 weeks later, they find a workaround and it worked. And that's the stuff, like, it's proper knowledge that you don't have when you're. I found it's like it's a very lonely job to be a founder. You lack a lot of knowledge.
Thank you.
Also, like, market knowledge. They know your industry. They know people. They make introduction. And the last thing, and that was the most important for me, is muscle, right? So we were, when they bought, we were 12, 13 million revenue company, and we bought a 40 million revenue company. That need cash. They were a little bit, but that's not a problem for them. But then they pick up the phone, they call two banks, and the banks are actually fighting to lend the money. And that's something you don't have. You need the muscle of private equity. Private equity is muscle in M&A very much.
Thank you. What are the biggest mistakes entrepreneurs make when going from $5 million to $20 million in revenue?
Confusing what's urgent with what's important. That's the biggest one. Like being in the company instead of being on the company. That's a big one. Not having a war chest. Like, depending on your industry, I want to see 6 months of burn rate in your bank account. I want that. I need that. Shit happens. Like, and you never plan for it. And oh no, I have everything planned. No, you don't. Nobody had the global financial crisis plan. Nobody had COVID plan. Like, stuff happen, and it's not rare. They happen all the time, actually, at a smaller level. So you need a war chest. Not having A players. Like, you need to, on every single job, you need to take time and energy focusing on get the best people you can at every job. It's important. It's super, super important. And the last one is not planning soon enough. Well, it's not the last one. There is plenty. Not planning soon enough what you want to be, where you want to go. And if you want to exit, you have to plan your exit very, very early. And like, yeah, there's many, many, many mistakes. Not knowing what you are, not knowing what your company is, not having a plan early enough, not having, like, get advisors, get people who've been there, done that, have a board ideally, you know, that all that kind of stuff.
Thank you. What are the top three things you would do differently if you started again from scratch?
So I already know the result of that because I calculated it. If I started from scratch now, knowing what I know, I would sell 50 million more than 5 years earlier. So top three things I do differently. First of all, I would focus into having a war chest. That's the number one, because when the next crisis hits, I don't have to grind for 5 years and I'm ready for it. Oh, there's so many. I'm trying to choose M&A even earlier, even more M&A. I did good with M&A. I did soon and I did good, but even earlier, and definitely, definitely plan my exit earlier. Like, I got a fantastic exit because I got incredibly lucky. Like, it could have been I didn't even do a due diligence on the private equity. It's the first thing you do when you want to sell your company. You do a due diligence. I didn't even do that. I just got lucky that I found out I found good guys. I
Thank
didn't even know how to recognize good guy. I do now.
you. Tell us where entrepreneurs can connect with you.
Oh, just go find me on LinkedIn. It's the easier. The good thing I have is I have a last name that doesn't return 50,000 hit when you look for it. So just find me on LinkedIn. You'll have everything there. It's easy.
Thank you.
Follow us for more interviews with world's most influential business titans, providing you with the insights to awaken to your full potential so you can get paid to be yourself, find true happiness, and manifest anything you desire.